welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the first episode of the Martinez Perspective podcast on alt-right.com. This podcast will go out on a weekly basis. I'm hoping it will be uploaded directly to the website. It's exclusively for the website. It will not be hosted on any third-party sites because those websites will simply remove my account. They will delete me. As you all know, I was removed from YouTube two weeks ago, completely deleted the channel, claiming I violated their hate speech policies because I tell the truth as I see it. I'm not going to waste any more of my time trying to exist on platforms controlled by our enemies. There's even a risk of, you know, them shutting down my website, or if enough people complain to my hosting company, they could possibly kick me off even my own website. It's less likely, though. You have to do something really egregious in order to be kicked off a server, although we did see the Daily Stormer get booted off of numerous servers and having to constantly bounce around to new ones for making a joke about the Heather Heyer death at the Charlottesville rally, right? So, you know, we're just walking on eggshells with these monopolies, these big tech monopolies, these gangster organizations that are run and controlled by leftists and Marxists, as we know. Google is openly known to be run at the top by progressives and SJWs. There was some guy that was fired from Google because he put out like a memo saying that women choose not to go into certain fields or something. He was trying to explain that the reason there wasn't that many women at Google or something was because women chose not to go in the fields of like computer science technology because they're just not interested in that shit and they're not suited for it. And the guy was literally fired for stating this fact by Google because Google is controlled by a bunch of leftist dirtbags, and that's how they operate. They just fire you and silence you if you disagree with their totalitarian leftist Marxist beliefs. So Facebook is controlled by Mark Zuckerberg, a Jew who is pushing leftist politics. I think one of the top executives at Facebook, her name is Sheryl Sandberg, another Jewish woman, who herself is a raging radical feminist, who is demanding, who was complaining the other week that men in the workplace, CEOs or bosses, were not mentoring women enough because they're afraid of the one-on-one contact with women in the workplace due to this Me Too femi-Marxist movement, which has made any dealings with women in the workplace a hazard, a danger for men because of their false accusations that they make against men, that they have been making against men. So, of course, men are basically stepping away from this, saying, forget this shit, I'm not even going to speak to these women, I'm not even going to get near these women, let's segregate the damn workplace. And these Marxist feminists who have brought this on themselves, and that Sheryl Sandberg is going around whining about this, saying, you better mentor her too. They're making a new hashtag out of this bullshit because they are losing out now. I love how they just bite the hand that feeds them, right? You know, they're just out of control. They don't know when to stop, and this is what we've seen. So I'm just laughing as all of this is happening. Good. Don't mentor these women. Don't give them any kind of special treatment whatsoever. They don't deserve it, you know. Another thing I wanted to mention right off the bat here was that I put out a call for writers for alt-right.com, my website. I'm looking for people who want to volunteer some of their free time to writing articles for my site. Just short little articles, commenting on news stories. I will accept longer research articles, but the problem with that is that the people who do the long research articles, essentially they'll write me like two articles a year, you know what I mean? So it's like I'm looking for more of a news and commentary thing, putting an alt-right spin on the news cycle. And, having interesting perspectives coming in regularly. I hope I can find people who will regularly contribute. That's the biggest problem that I've found is getting people to regularly contribute, and probably the reason being is that people want to be paid for their effort, and you know, I just can't pay these people because I get paid absolutely nothing to do this, so it's like I don't have some kind of salary or some kind of income drive to be able to pay writers to write for my website. So if I'm volunteering, you know, I expect other people to be volunteering their time as well. And hopefully as the site gets more hits and bigger traffic as we produce more content, then the donations will come in a bit bigger, and I will give contributors portions of those donations if they are contributing regularly, right? So please contact me if you're interested in writing for the site, or if you're interested in being interviewed or coming on my podcast. You can contact me through the website on the contact page, or you can email me at martinezperspective@hotmail.com. I look forward to your commentaries. So I had a few stories lined up for this first episode of the Martinez Perspective podcast. I've been reading an interesting book by a guy named Mike Buchanan. Now, you can find this guy on YouTube. Type in Mike Buchanan Feminism, and you can see him. He's on a lot of interviews on the mainstream media. He seems to be, he's a very presentable guy, very well-spoken. He's kind of, you know, has the posh English accent, very polite. So he's kind of a face of the men's rights movement in England, and he's associated with the men's rights community in the United States, led by Paul Elam, A Voice for Men. So I encourage you to go listen to some of his interviews. I like him. He doesn't hold back. I mean, he just names the facts. He states the facts as they are. He says that, you know, feminism is a gender privileging supremacy movement. He doesn't beat around the bush. He doesn't, you know, speak in riddles and mince his words. He just states the truth. He says these are crazy radicals who, they hate men, they're motivated by misandry, and they're seeking supremacy. That's what we need to say, because that's exactly what this movement is. So I really like some of his commentary. He really just nails these feminists to the wall on these TV shows. He's a bit mild-mannered, so he doesn't do it as forcefully as perhaps I would, because of my, you know, my personality is a bit more confrontational, you'd say. But he's definitely doing a good job. He's got a book called I believe it's called The Ugly Truth About Feminism, or the ugly Face of Feminism, or something like that. And on this one page here, there's a lot of good references. I've written down at least 10 books that he's referred to in this book, going over some of these issues. And one of them looks like an excellent book called The Woman Racket by a guy named Steve Moxon. And I just wanted to read this excerpt here for you from this book. Moxon writes in a section that's called Women's Preference for Their Own Sex, Serious Sex Discrimination Against Men. He says, the fourfold female preference for their own sex and the in-group, out-group differences between men and women means that employers entrusting recruitment to women are likely to get not the best man for the job, but more likely a mediocre woman. It also means potential problems of female performance in the job, and irrespective of ability. The upshot for men is serious sex discrimination against them in recruitment, whereas women candidates will tend on average not to suffer discrimination even if the interview panel is all male. Men candidates will probably suffer worst outcomes the greater is the proportion of female interviewers. If the panel is all women, then not only is this effect at its maximum, but there is no male perspective to counteract it. Women interviewers will prefer women, even aside from any feminist political attitudes or any acceptance of notions of supposed oppression of women or pressure through equal opportunities policies. There would seem to be two complementary reasons for this. First, the interviewer tends to feel a potential personal connection with any and every female applicant, even though she may be a complete stranger, and there need be no shared in-group for this to occur, as would be the case for men. Second, prejudicial preference will go relatively unchecked compared to how men would feel, given that women have a very different sense of in-group, and so will be less concerned about the impact of making a decision that may not be in the best interests of the work group. Performance in the job by female workers will tend to be problematic because of the relative failure to identify with the in-group of fellow workers and to focus instead on personal connectedness rather than the task at hand. This will reduce efficiency in the workplace directly, but there is also a further impact in that those members of the work group that the top clique of female workers do not feel personally related to will feel rejected. As a result, they will either become demotivated or work for themselves and competitively against the group. This is the opposite of how male workers would tend to behave. Men experience a mutually reinforcing sense of belonging to a group and competitiveness on behalf of the group, as well as individual effort within it to try to rise to the top. The current notion, though, is that women make better employees than men. Men are thought to be bullshy and women compliant, yet the more rule-based existence of men, apparent right from the days of school playground team sports, makes them likely to be more predictable and reasonable than women. Countless television advertisements exemplify by the excruciating BT Work Smarter series, but long ubiquitous, proclaim a contest of male dimwits versus female smarties. Some think that men are too status-oriented without seeing that there is a problem with women employees being too person-centered. Both male and female sex-typical behaviors could be regarded either as distractions from or contributions to the work culture, but employers certainly do prefer women, as a 1996 Roundtree report showed. Yet it is men who have the additional clear attributes of being both task-centered and of forming teams within the workplace rather than personal networks that may well be more connected with life outside, though sometimes female work teams are as effective as male ones. Conclusive evidence of wide-scale discrimination against men at the job application stage was uncovered in 2006 by Peter Riak and Judith Rich, an experimental investigation of sexual discrimination in hiring in the English labor market. They had sent pairs of resumes to employers, one from a mythical applicant called Philip and another from a no less fictional Emma, differing from each other only in the most minor details, but sufficient to ensure they would not be detected as being identical. The experience, qualifications, age, marital status, socioeconomic background, every relevant detail were as near to identical as could make no difference. They awaited the offer of an interview or a request for a telephone discussion or a rejection note or silence. Nobody was prepared for the result, not even the direction of it, let alone the size. It was not women but men who got the fewer offers, and by not a small margin but by a massive factor of four. Uncannily, this is precisely the same factor by which women prefer other women to men, as discovered in research into the female social psychology of in-group. Have workplaces completely capitulated to basing their hiring entirely on female prejudice? HR is a predominantly female profession. So that is very, very interesting, isn't it? That not only are feminists lying when they say that women are discriminated against in the workplace, it's actually the opposite is true. Men are discriminated against by women. So women prefer to work with other women. They can connect better. They can create more of a social connection with them. Women tend to be more sociable, meaning they just talk more. They're just blabbing 24/7. And that really results in inefficiency, gossip, really just a lot of unnecessary drama that they bring to the workplace, right? I'm sure many of you have experienced that firsthand working with women, is they're constantly talking and doing stupid shit and not doing their jobs. And creating useless drama throughout the workplace. That's why you never want to get involved in a relationship with a woman who works at your same place of employment, because it will only ever result in gossip and drama and bullshit. If the relationship goes south, she will actually try to get you fired from that job, right? Because she doesn't want to see you anymore. You know, things have gone south, maybe it ended badly, and she will scheme and do whatever it takes to get you kicked out of that job, right? So just don't shit where you eat is basically the advice there, right? But this is something I've understood for a long time. You know, whenever women would interview me, it was so obvious that they would, if there was a candidate, if the two candidates were me and a woman, they would pick the woman simply because she's a woman and they have more of a camaraderie, more of a bias for that woman, right? This is how female employers operate. They're all feminist in their thinking and they want to just hire women and screw over men. That's how it works. And that's what diversity quotas are all about. Kicking more qualified men out of positions to fill up these, upscale type jobs, these white collar jobs, office jobs with women. Because those are the only jobs that women want to do, choose to do, because they're comfortable, they're low risk, they're not dangerous, they're relatively easy, right? Well, you're just crunching some numbers on a computer, sending off emails, doing a lot of PR bullshit, meetings and all this crap. Women love all that fucking social bullshit, right? Anything technical, they hate it because their brains just don't function that way. So there was an article here that said, this is in the NPR, says, new report says college-educated women will soon make up majority of U.S. labor force. Says women who have graduated from college are on track to make up a majority of the labor force in 2019, marking a turning point in gender parity. While women have made up a majority of college-educated adults for roughly four decades, they haven't always been a part of the workforce. Now women are neck and neck with men in the labor pool. This year's first quarter findings reported 29.5 million women in the labor force had a minimum a bachelor's degree, which now outnumbers college-educated men, according to Pew Research. Women ages 25 and older now account for more than half of the college-educated workforce, increasing 11%. The 1981-82 academic school year was the first time women received more bachelor's degrees than men. Since then, women have consistently outpaced men in earning that same level of education, making up 57% of bachelor's degrees. And then it goes on to claim that they still make less money. Yeah, it's because they go into fields that pay less. It's just that simple. Now, this of course, you know, so women are getting more bachelor's degrees than men, mostly in fucking stupid bullshit careers like psychology, sociology. They go into social or anything social, right? This is just clearly shown by scientific evidence that women are more in tune to the personal human side of things, the empathetic part of the brain. They love to talk, you know, to make connections with other people. That's the female imperative, the biological imperative, and that's totally reflected into the fields that they enter, right? They disproportionately get involved in fields that are more public relations type stuff, customer service kind of job. They love those things. So they love to just talk to people, right? They love just opening their mouths. I think one study said that women speak 5,000 more words a day than men. And if they had to just explain something, it would take them like twice the amount of words as a man to explain something or to state an opinion or something like that. It's crazy. I mean, it's just borne out by the facts, right? Everybody understands that who's dealt with women on a regular basis. So as more women enter the workforce, of course, they're having to create like new bullshit jobs to give these women, right? Like the government is always just scheming to empower professions that women are interested in that really are useless professions, like marketing. Marketing is just dominated by women. All these people do is just try to put out bullshit advertisements to convince people to waste their money on useless products that they don't need, which has really, really corrupted our culture, and that's basically a female... It's female industry, not entirely, but it's dominated by them, I would say. So as more of these women go into the workforce, of course, this has contributed vastly to the decline in the birth rate among Western countries. Of course, if women are just focused on careers, they're not going to be interested in having children, at least not in their peak fertility years in their 20s. They're going to think about children like when they're 30 or early 30s. And by that time, you know, they're not going to have as much energy, and they're certainly not going to have more than one or two kids, especially if they're working. Now, as they swell the labor market, what does that mean for men? That means less men are going to be able to find work because they're competing now with women. And this has resulted in high amounts of male unemployment. Coupled with that is this bullshit diversity, these diversity quotas that many Western governments have implemented in order to privilege women in certain professions, to give them a leg up over men. So like these companies are forced by law, they will be fined if they do not hire a certain amount of women each year, which is absolutely crazy. You know, this is open discrimination against white men for inferior female candidates simply based on their gender. This is privileging people based on their gender. And of course they have the minority quotas as well, like discriminating against white men in favor of black men and brown men and black and brown women and white women. So white men are at the bottom of this totem pole, right? Bottom of this power dynamic. White men are, it's openly open season, open discrimination against white men, even though white men built up these societies, white men invented everything of value in our societies, white men sustain these societies, and we are being shit on and kicked down vociferously by these psychopathic Marxists who control our governments. And these women are like, yay, we love this shit because we get all the cushy office jobs, the air-conditioned corner office, yay. Right, and this is why they love it. Actually, I spoke with a feminist the other day, and the typical backstory of a, you know, a middle-aged feminist, 40s, really career focused. Feminists are just these career focused women. These are women who have shunned. They've basically decided that they want nothing to do with family or children, for whatever reason. And then they cite, oh, I just want my free time, I want to be free, I don't want to be tied down by a family, blah, blah, blah. So they can go out more and be a slut, and they can travel more and do stupid shit, right? And this broad, like, it's just the typical lifestyle of these feminists, right? Obsessed with their work, they're nihilistic, they don't care about anything. And they really don't care about their own country, you know. I think this broad at one point says, like, I talked about how we're going to be replaced because of the low birth rates. And she's like, who cares? We all die anyway. So this is the kind of like nihilistic mindset that these feminist women have. They're just total like hedonists who only care about their own personal short-term interests and needs. They have no concern for the nation, and because they have no real stake in the nation, right? They haven't invested in the nation. In the nation's future, which would come from, of course, having children that will grow up in this country. So, you know, I'm obviously an exception to that. I don't have children, but I'm heavily invested in the future of Western civilization and society. And there are many men of the right who don't have children. Now, I'm not saying I'll never have children. I just don't have any right now, and my circumstances haven't come up for me to do that. But you know, obviously there are men of the right that don't have children that have committed themselves to our cause. But for women, they really need an incentive to care. Men care because we are connected with history and philosophy, and we have the brains and the creativity, and the interest level is just there with men fundamentally. Whereas women, they always need some kind of incentive, right? It's always like they won't do anything unless they're getting some benefit from it, right? And so if they don't have children, they just don't give a shit about the trajectory of the country. The only thing they care about in terms of the trajectory of the country are things that affect them personally. So you see, the only issues that these femcons care about is abortion and women's rights and women's access to this and that, and just privileging of women. The only issues that these single women in their 30s, these middle-aged single women care about are issues that empower themselves and their own personal selfish interests because they're a bunch of narcissistic cunts, right? So this is this is what it all comes down to. Women without children are extremely narcissistic, self-centered, selfish, and it reflects entirely on their worldview and their choices, right? And in their political philosophy, which is this pure Marxist feminism leftism. They don't really give a shit about any issue other than feminism, right? These bitches couldn't fucking have any kind of discussion about anything else politically other than feminism and women's bullshit rights, you know. So these women are just useless, you know. And, of course, they want to privilege themselves, empower themselves, so they support leftism and leftist politicians because those politicians promise to give them privileges and empower them and give them free shit that they didn't earn, they don't deserve. It was just hilarious speaking to this woman. You know, I just basically ran over this chick with the facts. And she had no real response to anything. These stupid feminists really just collapse under the weight of truth every time. And I said, you know, they brought this one point is that, you know, men, we do all the dangerous, dirty, hard, laborious jobs that make our society function, right? Who excavates the natural gas from the deep sea drilling and digs all the minerals out of the mines that produce all the products that we have today, and who goes into the deep sea to catch the salmon and the fish that we eat, who cultivates all the food and the crops, the meat, who harvests and cultivates all that. So it's men, who's driving the lorries and who does the garbage collection and then the sewage treatment. It's all men doing these jobs. So men, we do all the dangerous, dirty, and really just unpleasant jobs, dangerous jobs, and 90%+ of workplace deaths are men. And women only do jobs that are totally safe, comfortable, and easy. And yet they laugh at us, they scoff at us, they have the nerve to complain, you know, to really complain. And it's just absurd. They just have no thanks for the goodwill of men to make their lives easier. You know, all the heating, the electricity, the food in their fridges, all of this is cultivated by men. They take a total advantage of these things and give no thanks whatsoever for the sacrifices of men to bring these resources to women, essentially, right? They just simply take and take, and then they spit in your face and say, ha ha, I want some free shit from the government, give me a cushy office job, and kick men out of those positions because I'm a woman, I'm entitled, right? And this broad basically had to admit that that's the case. You know, if she really wants equality, they throw this word around, equality, then why aren't women lining up to be construction workers, to be deep sea fishermen, to be laborers in the factories and on the oil rigs, you know? They are absolutely not interested in doing any of those jobs because they just don't have the physical prowess to be able to do those jobs efficiently. And they just don't like them because they're uncomfortable. It's possible that they could, but they don't want to put in the work to do it. They don't want anything that's not pleasant, that's not air conditioned, that doesn't have a water cooler, that they can go get a refreshment every 5 minutes. You know, that they a computer, laptop that they can't go and check their Facebook notifications. This is what women want. They want pure comfort. And that's why women, you know, far less women are homeless than men, because women can't survive out on the streets. You know, they can't survive. They don't know how to survive unless everything is just provided to them on a silver platter. Yeah, that's why it's mostly men. And I believe there is a correlation between this feminist gynocratic system pushing men out of the workforce and male suicide, right? You have the male suicide rate now, it says On average, the annual U.S. suicide rate increased 24% between 1999 and 2014, from 10.5 to 13 suicides per 100,000 people, the highest rate recorded in 28 years. It's no surprise that the rise of feminism, the rise of this women's empowerment bullshit, the rise of diversity quotas and artificial privileging of women over men in fields where men naturally excel at and are better than women, this has led to a rise in suicide rates because men are increasingly depressed because their role in society has been taken away artificially. You know, if a man doesn't have a job, you know, he's going to be extremely stressed in terms of providing for not only himself, but if he has a family, he's going to be stressed out to provide for them. And a lot of these men feel they have no way out but just to commit suicide. There's just no job prospects, or at least where they live. And the pressure is mounting, you know. The pressure is mounting on men to sort of find their place in this gynocratic system that spits on them, that hates them, that mocks them, that doesn't acknowledge their sacrifices for this society. And, of course, these Marxist femcunts will never acknowledge the contribution of men. The fact that men, white men, invented everything of value today. All modern technology was invented by men, from dishwashers, vacuums, the microchip, laptop computers, and even social media, of course, was invented by men. And they use all of these great inventions by men, but they give no thanks and then tell men to get the fuck out of here, give me your jobs, right? That's what it's all about with these people. So, but, you know, of course, as society continues to decline, you know, there's also must be a correlation between the rise of women and the rapid civilizational decline that we're experiencing in terms of massive immigration, in terms of economic uncertainty and decline, in terms of this cultural rot that we're witnessing, this progressivist virus that's sweeping across the West and, you know, promoting the most degenerate behaviors imaginable as normal, such as these transgenderism and child drag queens and drag queen story time being pushed on youngsters. It's absolutely sick, and there has to be a correlation between the influence of women and these degenerate cultural trends that we're witnessing sweep across the West. It's the influence of women and leftist ideology. There's also a correlation between two of those things, because women who are single, who are not married, ultimately favor leftist ideology, because leftist ideology has part of one of its central tenets, the empowerment of women, right? That's what it's all about. Women only care about themselves, not for nation, not for family, because if they don't have any family, then it's of no concern to them. But even these feminists, some of these feminists have families and mothers, and they're just pushing the same kind of bullshit, egalitarian type rhetoric within their own families. Like the father has to do half of the child care and half of the housework and half of this and whatever, right? I just feel sorry for men who have hitched up with these feminists and, you know, have to put up with this kind of bitching and moaning 24/7. There's another story saying they've implemented gender quotas to help to push women into comedy writing. Yeah, the reason women don't write comedy is because they're not funny. Have you ever met a funny female in your life? I haven't. Women, like, literally every girl that I've dated has been just totally unfunny. They haven't been able to crack any kind of joke that's even halfway funny. So what do you expect there to be, you know, just swarms of women getting into comedy writing? It's just ridiculous. The only thing women write half decently are these stupid novellas, man. These stupid soap operas and, you know, romance novels. Like, those are the only things that women are actually decent at writing, because they're so predisposed to drama-oriented activities that, you know, those are, of course, the only types of writing that they excel at. But, of course, they're going to push gender quotas on the comedy industry now. I think this is in England. And trying to get a 50-50 gender representation. It's just social engineering. This is just pure Marxism, Bolshevism, right? They're trying to fabricate equality that just doesn't exist in nature, and it will majorly backfire on them, I believe. So there is another story here. This was in Vice. A lot of the stories here I have today are kind of manosphere related. It says Vice News says men want you to orgasm because it makes them feel manly, a study says. According to research, your boyfriend's insistence on making you come may have more to do with him viewing your orgasm as a masculinity achievement than with your sexual satisfaction. A study from 2017 in the Journal of Sex Research found that men view the female orgasm as an opportunity to confirm their manhood. These findings suggest that men who think sexually pleasing women is important are really doing it to please themselves. Thanks to the Sexual Scripts Society of Science People, men often feel they have to prove themselves through symbolically masculine achievements. The authors write, because previous research, blah, blah, blah. The study analyzed the responses from 810 men who were older than 18 and currently sexually attracted to women. During the experiment, researchers posted an image of an orgasm exercise. Participants read four anecdotes that had them imagine having sex with a female they had and had sex with three times already. Blah, 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 blah. It just goes on to say that... says reported higher feelings of masculinity after reading a vignette in which a female partner orgasmed versus a vignette in which a female partner did not orgasm. And then it goes on to claim that the sexology website SciPost noted that women's orgasms shouldn't be seen as another notch on the bedpost, so to speak. Women's orgasms should be experienced as a wonderful part of sexuality, not as something men give to women as an example of their prowess. Shut the hell up. These stupid leftists are complaining. So it's like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't with these dumb cunts, right? So when a man doesn't make the woman orgasm, oh, he's just not performing correctly in the bed, right? He's just not living up to her standards, and he's just lame in the bed. So they'll mock men who can't make the bitch orgasm, but then when he does make her orgasm, they condemn him anyway and say, oh, he's only doing so to please his own fucking ego, right? So fucking what if that's the case, right? You know, yeah, like, from my perspective, that's absolutely true. Like, if I'm trying to make this bitch orgasm, it is a masculine achievement. There's nothing, I don't give a shit if she orgasms or not, right? It's like, I should have that attitude, because why should I just be a little beta cuck? I might as well be one of those little bitches who puts on the BDSM bullshit and gets one of these dominatrix to whip me in the ass, right? This is what some of these dudes do. They believe that their job is just to please this woman in the bedroom. No, it's not, right? If anything, she should be trying to please me. I'm the one that's doing all the work in the bedroom, right? The woman just sits there, lays on her back, whatever, gets in a position, does absolutely no work whatsoever. You know, some of these bitches don't even get blowjobs, so it's like, what am I supposed to think? Like, I'm just there to please her, and that's how these fem cunts think, is literally, you're just there to please them, to make them orgasm, and even when you do, it's not good enough, because you're just a fucking machist asshole, right? Like, this is how crazy these people are. Like, what the hell they want, you know? Like, it doesn't matter if that's his motive, like, you know. If the bitch is getting satisfied, why the fuck is she complaining about it, right? But this is how ridiculous this feminist shit has gotten. It's like, they're really just trying to destroy anything, any kind of normal relations between men and women. They just want to complain and bitch about, moan about everything, make some kind of utopian, egalitarian scenario. And really all they're looking for is men to become slaves to women, to serve women, to cater to their needs, to just be these little beta cuck simps doing whatever's possible to please these females. And they're never satisfied, as you can see with this stupid fucking article, right? So it's like, you know, you could be the biggest cuck, the biggest simp, the biggest mangina, and doing everything possible to please this broad that you're with, and it's just not good enough, because women are like kids in the candy store. The fat kid, is never satisfied, right? He wants more. He wants a bigger piece of cake. He wants more gummy bears, right? And this is how these broads operate. Another article here says YouTube deletes the channel of Spain's populist Vox Party. You know, that's fucking hilarious. So I'm not surprised. Vox is a decent party in Spain. I've complimented them before because of their strong stance against feminism. They have called for repealing bullshit laws like the gender violence law in Spain, which allows women to make false allegations against men of domestic violence, and that man is immediately presumed to be guilty. And that law has been just weaponized by the feminist Marxist movement to make the lives of men hell in Spain. So the Vox Party is a decent party. It's good on pretty good on immigration. It's certainly not good enough. It's not alt-right. They're kind of like Trump, actually. They made their slogan is "Make Spain Great Again." They want a stronger border, etc. They're really just copying the kind of populist stuff from Vox and from Marine Le Pen in France. Not going far enough. They're a pro-Jew party. They've even written like articles, like research papers, saying how Spain needs to be more supportive of Israel and bullshit like that. So this is what you always find with these populists, is like they'll go just far enough to the right to be negatively labeled by the leftist media, but then, you know, then they compromise on all these other issues that are important, especially the JQ issue. They're all pro-Jew, Zionist sycophants who say we should basically continue to get our ass raped by Israel and get sucked into squabbles in the Middle East. This is from an article on Paul Joseph Watson's website. It says, YouTube has deleted the populist Spanish Vox Party's entire channel, and yet another example of Google-owned platform targeting right-of-center political content. It says, Spain's Vox has demanded an explanation for this. The party itself tweeted, "The decision to remove the channel is a serious attack on the freedom of expression and dissemination of a political party." It subsequently emerged that the deletion of a channel likely came as a result of simultaneous copyright claims made by leftists. YouTube has informed us that the disabling of the Vox channel is due to their complaint made by three people who believe that we have used content of theirs. The party blamed left-wing activists for coordinating the takedown. The party said that other political parties had used the same content and weren't taken down. "We call on these platforms who claim to fight online abuse to pursue groups of progressive trolls who report in an organized manner and for ideological reasons to all those accounts that do not conform to their unique thinking." So essentially they weren't kicked off for hate speech like I was. They were kicked off for alleged copyright. And that's another tool of these leftists, right? They just file these copyright complaints against everybody. So essentially, you can't even quote anybody in a fucking video. It's ridiculous. Like, how can you have a video where you're not able to show the video or the statements of other people when you're making a fucking response video, right? But this is how it works, and this is how YouTube is dead. There's no reason. I think everybody should get off YouTube. Don't use that fucking platform. It's bullshit. It's run by a bunch of leftist Marxists and Jews who control it and are just censoring anyone who they disagree with, right? We have to put our efforts into viable things. Like, we're using the enemy's platforms. We're trying to use the enemy's platforms against them, and they are just simply censoring us and clamping down on it. So it's like, why waste the time? Like, I built up that YouTube channel over a year or so. You know, up to what? Like, it just slowly grew up to 1,300 subs. That was the maximum, which is not even a lot for putting out all these videos. And then in 2 seconds, the whole fucking thing is deleted. So it's like, why did I even waste my time? I'm almost glad that they deleted my YouTube, because now it's pushed my focus back to my website and writing now, back to what I like to do. And in order to grow my website, I have to make it a written content website. And if I'm going to do video or audio, host it directly on my site so the hits come to me and not to fucking YouTube, who's making money off of it, right? So I don't even care. A lot of these like classical liberals, they've made this huge issue out of free speech and stuff. It's like, I've been subjected to this for the past 10 years. Like, I've had at least 15 YouTube accounts deleted. I've had websites kicked off of servers multiple times. I've had like 10 Twitter accounts you know, I've had pages on Facebook banned. I've been banned off of pretty much everything. So, like, this doesn't even faze me anymore. So when I see these, like, classical liberals, like crying in an outrage over the censorship, it's like, this is normal to me. This is, like, something that I've seen consistently over the years, especially because I've been so focused on the Jewish question and exposing Jewish supremacism and power in the world, which is the ultimate taboo that these companies do not tolerate whatsoever. So I just don't really give a shit. There's no point in whining about it and crying about the censorship. Nothing's going to happen. These companies have way too much monopoly power to give a shit. None of these channels are producing much money for them anyway. It's only these faggot channels, these stupid vloggers and beauty content and just degenerate fucking losers on there who are just making stupid content like playing video games. So, you know, they just have no incentive to keep right-wingers on their platforms. Just, you know, the left-wing outrage mob will just come and complain, and then YouTube has to fucking do something about it because they want to maintain their leftist progressive audiences that use their networks, right? So fuck YouTube. It's a piece of shit. It's run by Jews and leftist Marxists who are out to destroy Western civilization. That's what we should fucking be saying right now. YouTube is really, it really just feeds into the narcissism, because like these people get big YouTube channels and then they're fucking obsessed and like addicted to uploading videos, and they feel they have to upload videos like every day to get the fucking comments rolling in. It's really just almost like Instagram. It's just a fucking narcissistic circle jerk, and really doesn't do any good for us. So screw that. I mean, I have a BitChute channel. I don't know if I'm gonna even upload on there. I think I'm just going to upload everything directly to my website, including videos. If I decide to make videos again, I'm going to upload it directly to my site, you know. So people can, if they want to see what I have to say, they're going to have to come to my site. It's like I would like to have other platforms, but I just can't sustain them unless I'm to totally just whitewash my own message and self-censor and speak out of both sides of my mouth and mince my words and be polite, you know, which are things that I'm reluctant to do because it's just annoying. You know, I was trying to do some of that on YouTube, and even that didn't work, right? So I'm surprised that there's some channels like JF and Mark Collette, and these people are still, I can't believe they're still on YouTube. I mean, but that guy, that JF guy has made, like, he's like, like in an OCD manner, has like attempted to follow the YouTube guidelines and shit, and has booted people off of his show for using certain language and stuff. So that guy is just like obsessively, you know, tried to like, you know, speak in a manner that will allow him to continue to exist on there, and I just don't have the patience to do that, you know. So everything is going to be put on alt-right.com. Censorship is not going to stop. It was only going to get worse. You know, not only was there, I grew up in Canada, so I was seeing people in Canada, they used to have this Section 13 law, which was this insane draconian legislation that was not even part of the regular criminal code. This was like some fucking like Stalinist Marxist tribunal thing where you get dragged in front of this tribunal. Now, it was a law binding because people who were charged under this law, the police would raid their houses and confiscate all their computers and drag them in front of these tribunals and try to fucking embarrass them with posts that they made on Stormfront and so forth. And they would be given punishment of a lifetime speech ban on certain topics. That means these people were like in a digital gulag. They were not able to speak about the issues that they were speaking on. And a lot of them, all of them were white people, right? The only people that got charged under these fucking bullshit Marxist laws were white people who were complaining about immigrants and so forth, or Jews. Jews were like the main complainant group. Like the Jewish organizations in Canada would just file all these hate speech complaints against their critics and get these people's lives ruined, the B'nai B'rith Canada and the Canadian Jewish Congress. And there was this lawyer that was essentially just a tool of these Jewish groups that would go around and harass people with lawsuits. And literally, they were so fucking draconian that they went after people. They went after this one guy with a very mild, kind of center-right website who had a forum, and like one post talked about the AIDS virus in black people or something, and how they disproportionately have AIDS because they're more sexually active. And this post had like 5 total views. Like 5 people saw this post, and then it was removed. And then these psycho fucking Marxists went after this website and dragged the website owner through court for a decade. They just kept pushing this case against him, even though the post was removed, even though virtually nobody saw it. It's literally just a fucking racket. It was like a literal racket to enrich this one lawyer who was working for these Jewish groups, who was just using this as a personal cash cow against people. Literally, he was just like a parasite lawyer who was just literally trying to ruin people's lives so he could make a fucking buck off of it and help the Jews in the process, right? I mean, this is the kind of psycho shit you saw in Canada. And you have trannies now filing hate speech complaints against people for misgendering them. Like, it's gone so out of hand that, like, you know, I don't know how any, like, white male sees any kind of future in Canada. It's literally a fucking SJW gulag. Like, the prime minister is an open radical leftist feminist SJW pro-immigration refugee harboring psycho piece of crap. And, you know, white men are just total open season to bash and discriminate against white men. I mean, there's just no future for white men in Canada. It is a fucking dystopian nightmare. You know, it's almost like the thing they're predicting. I saw a video from Paul Watson earlier, Cyberpunk 2020, like, predicted this video game from the 80s, predicted the dystopian nightmare of diversity in this video game. Let me just play this little clip here.
Cyberpunk 2020 was a 1988 tabletop role-playing game, the second version of which was set in a fictional 2020. The game takes place in a dystopian future where multiculturalism has failed and America is, quote, divided by class, race, and economics. The main themes of the game pertain to futuristic transport, weaponry, and transhumanism. But it's the cultural and sociological tropes featured in the game that make some of its predictions eerily prescient. Again, to emphasize, this RPG was originally created 30 years ago, and in an updated 1994 rulebook, we find this stunningly pinpoint prophecy about life in 2020. Diversity and unity. It is now accepted among historical scholars that in the decades before the collapse, America suffered from the sickness of racism and cultural identity. Everyone wanted to be seen as special. Every group had to be equal to or preferably better than its neighbors and fought to protect its special rights. If anyone had something that someone else wanted, they were painted as racist, sexist, elitist, or worse. This divisive me-first attitude eventually tore the fabric of American culture apart and caused it to self-destruct in a fireball of competing ideologies, none of which truly recognized each other's validity. Diversity led inexorably to anarchy. Wow, I guess the designers of Cyberpunk 2020 must have been racists. Yeah, actually it was created by this based black dude. But anyone who has followed modernity's obsession with identity politics and the sanctification of victimhood as a form of special status exploited to impose political and cultural hegemony. That's a creepily prophetic observation, given that it was made nearly 3 decades ago. But that one...
So that's very interesting. They're obviously, you know, correct. This is the future. It's just a bunch of competing ideologies warring over the same territory. You know, I always bring it back to the example of the Spanish Civil War. This was a country, Spain, at the time, that was racially homogenous, that was culturally homogenous, that was religiously homogenous. It was almost entirely a Catholic country. There were no other races in Spain. There were no blacks at that time. There were virtually no Arabs. No, it was just white Spaniard Christians, and they had a bloody and brutal civil war over the political differences in the country. It was purely a political fight. It was anarchists and communists and leftists and these Republicans versus the nationalists, versus the Falangists and the monarchists, who made a coalition on the right. So if a country that is racially, culturally, and religiously homogenous can descend into brutal civil war and bloodshed based on just political difference, imagine the chaos that will ensue when we mix in here, we throw in different races, let's say, you know, 5-6 different races, all the races of man in one territory. And we throw in cultural difference, we throw in difference of national origin, we throw in religious difference, and we throw in the political difference, which is the most volatile. And we will get an absolute fucking nightmare of a society. And we are already starting to see that happening. And of course, all of this will come apart because, you know, nature always takes its course. Nature will bring us back to segregation. We will naturally divide ourselves. Biology trumps ideology a lot of the time. Not always, but a lot of the time. And we are going to see the races self-segregate based on racial lines, as you see happen in prisons across the West. The blacks go with the blacks, the Mexicans with the Mexicans, the whites with the whites, and so forth. This will happen on a societal level once things become so bad in terms of this melting pot environment that they're pursuing here, that they're enforcing on us. The races will segregate, the religions will segregate, and the political factions will segregate as well. And we're going to see just really dangerous situations, very volatile situations. We're going to see civil wars break out across the West. It's just inevitable. The more these leftist lunatics push this diversity cult, this massive immigration, this leftist politics, this progressive virus, the more you'll see people going their own way with their own people and thinking, you know, I have to side with my team, which is my race, essentially. At the end of the day, it comes down, the most potent of all the things will be race, I believe. I believe race will be where people will most naturally segregate themselves. Religion could also be one, but I believe biology will trump all of those things. And we're starting to see that play out, right? But these ideological zealots will not stop. They will not stop until they achieve this nightmare. And we're living through it today, right? So all we can really do is point out what's happening, point out the effects of what could happen, and, you know, try to find some kind of solution to, you know, salvage something. In that sense, I've advocated kind of smaller nation states, because a big country is just, you know, it's just it's so prone to being divided up based on just regional differences, and then the cultural and stuff happens. Just look at Spain. You have Catalonia and the Basque who have tried to separate themselves from Spain, and this based entirely on just a linguistic difference, right? So it's like, you know, a smaller nation, I believe it will be more successful. That's why you see smaller, more homogenous states having less volatile politics and have rarely engaged in civil war. But you know, that solution, of course, is also extremely difficult. Like, how are we going to break off a piece of territory, and the governments are just not going to allow that, right? These progressive globalist lunatics will just clamp down on us. But we have to come up with some solution. You know, we have to form our own communities and you know, segregate ourselves from these psychopathic maniacs who want to destroy our civilization. It's a white civilization. We should be proud to be white. White men built all of this that we see today. Everything good about the world was produced by white males. And we need to preserve that, right? So I'm going to wrap up the audio today. I'm going to keep it within an hour's time. I appreciate everyone listening to this. This will be uploaded on the website and listenable there. So again, I put a call out for writers. If you want to write for alt-write.com, send me an email, send me a message on the website. I will appreciate new contributors and new content. I'm always looking for new people with like mine to add to these discussions. I'd like to get new people on the podcast to comment on these news stories alongside myself. So the website is alt-right.com. If you want to support me and the website, you can donate to my PayPal. There's a link on the website. Or you can buy my books on Amazon. All of that is available on alt-right.com. Thank you all for listening for this first episode of the Martinez Perspective. I look forward to next week's podcast. Take care and have a great night, everyone.